This is She Becomes, a podcast from the Junior League of Houston about unlocking the potential of women and training the next generation of women leaders.
When we incarcerate a woman, we not only incarcerate her, but we incarcerate her family and her community. And that's largely what we see. You know, these women all have families, their mothers and their daughters. And for a lot of these women, they have been on this criminal justice journey for a while.
Hi, I'm Laura Eisensee, and today on She Becomes, we're learning about how we can better support women who've been previously incarcerated as they integrate back into society.
My name is Kristen Guinea. I'm the executive director at Angela House, which is a transitional living facility for women coming out of incarceration here in Houston.
Thank you so much for joining us. Tell us more about Angela House.
Right, so we have existed here in Houston for 20 years. We celebrated our 20th anniversary this year, and we take in up to 16 residents at a time. The only requirement is that they have to be coming right out of incarceration. So the majority of our women come from the Texas prison system. Some come from the local jails. The three most frequent offenses for which they have been convicted are prostitution, drugs, and theft. And really what we focus on is holistic wraparound services. So that looks like therapy, addiction counseling, educational resources, job training, in order to get them to a place that when they leave here, they can have successful independent living.
When they come to Angela House, typically, like, how long are they staying and what does their daily life look like?
We ask for a 4-month commitment because we feel like that's the time period by which in which the cloud lifts and they can see a life different from what they lived before they were incarcerated. Most of the women who stay 4 months end up staying longer. Our average stay is about 9 to 13 months. The first 6 months, they do really intensive outpatient drug rehabilitation programming. And that is done with one of our community partners. But in addition to that, they're also doing classes on healthy eating, anger management, good decision making, group and individual therapy. When they finish that 6-month outpatient drug rehabilitation, then we help them find jobs. We really stress for them that it isn't just any job. We want them to find a job that they're passionate about. We work with them. Many of them are coming with very little educational backgrounds. And so that immediately limits their job opportunities. Plus, of course, they have felony records, which employers, oftentimes give pause at. And so we help them find a living wage. We help them save for when they do leave. They have a nest egg and a safety net. That for many of them, it's the first time they've had a savings account and an ability to make financial decisions without the chaos of having to decide between paying the light bill or fixing that flat tire.
And what kind of results have y'all seen with your work with women transitioning back into society? Is there any kind of broad numbers that you can share?
Absolutely. Less than 3 or 4 years ago, the University of Texas Health Sciences Department did a study looking at our women versus other women coming out of incarceration. And the study found that for women who stayed the 4 months, we had an 83% success rate, which meant that in 2 years, they weren't being rearrested. That's significantly higher than the state and national averages for women coming out of incarceration. And the reason for that is because we often release these women back into communities without the proper tools and resources to help them succeed. You know, the prison system has become a warehousing system and not a rehabilitation system. And so that's where the private and the religious sectors have to step in and fill that gap, provide that employment assistance, provide the therapy and the tools that are necessary for these women to succeed.
Do you know off the top of your head what that state and national average is closer to?
The national recidivism rate and state recidivism rate, which is the going back to incarceration after having been released, is about 40 to 60%.
So Angela House, the women you're serving are, it's like twice as likely then that they'll stay in society and really build a better life.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful. You've talked about a couple different kinds of support between the life skills and the therapy, the drug rehabilitation. Of those different kinds of support, what do you find is most transformational?
for the majority of these women, it really is the therapy. The therapy is kind of the backbone of our program. I come from the criminal justice world. I am a lawyer by training, and I have long since said I can get people sober, either through positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement, but they won't stay sober unless they've been able to unpack the trauma that for many of these women led to their incarceration in the first place. The vast majority of our women and the vast majority of women who are in the criminal justice system at all are survivors of sexual abuse and domestic violence. They were living at or below the poverty line, many of them. And so they have a lot of trauma that they're not used to unpacking, right? They didn't have the, these are survivors. These women have been able to survive horrible, horrible circumstances, but through that, they learned to just bottle it in, keep it all in and not address it. And so until they can address that trauma, they don't have much of a hopeful life. And so the therapy is really the backbone.
You've shared some stories. Angela House has shared some stories, some testimonies of some of the women you've served on your website. I was wondering, you know, one of them, Shannon, she talked about her profession being a hairdresser, and also Sharonda talking about, you know, the support that she found.
I'm a hairdresser of 32 years in the West University area. When I came here, I was broken and I was addicted to drugs. I'm now learning here at Angela House that some tools for my sobriety that I can use, like AA meetings, going to classes, and they're also giving me a sense of community. I am working also getting my hair license back, my driver's license back, and etc. I've got lots going on. But with Angela's help, they are helping me to mend my life back together and giving me help for my future. And I am so forever grateful and thankful for Angela House and their caring staff.
Hi, my name is Sharonda and I'm a resident at Angela House. I am grateful that they had a space available for a woman like me that was in my time of need. While I'm here, I'm learning unity, different coping mechanisms that help me do positive things in life. I used to do negative things that I didn't want to do. And when I got here, I learned that I didn't have to do it, that there's another way. And Angela's House has showed me the light to that other way. And I am very grateful.
I was wondering if you could share any more about, you know, their stories or how their stories reflect the journey of women at Angela House.
Absolutely. We have served close to 500 women in the time that we've been opened. And these women all have very specific individualized stories, but they share a common path. They are drug addicts. Many of them have prostitution history. And so there's a lot of shame relative to that. And Teresa, our staff therapist, helps them unpack that shame, give it a name, and allow them to move past it. So both Shannon and Sharonda have graduated from Angela House. They're living independently. Both are employed. Both have reconnected with their families in an amazing, transformative way. You know, we had an attorney general for the United States several years ago that said, when we incarcerate a woman, we not only incarcerate her, but we incarcerate her family and her community. And that's largely what we see. You know, these women all have families. At Angela House, many of the women still retain legal custody of their children, even if their children are living with someone else while they're here. Their mothers and their daughters. And for a lot of these women, they have been on this criminal justice journey for a while. We don't get many true first offenders. And so their families have supported them and been with them through this journey. And that has caused a lot of family trauma. And so that has to be dealt with. The ripple effects are huge. You know, when people ask me why I do what I do, the reality is I'm a mom. And, you know, these women have children and they live in our communities. And so if we expect them to reintegrate successfully, we have to give them the tools. That's on us.
That's something that I wanted to talk more about, of when you think about the people who've been incarcerated, you are serving women who, as you say, are mothers or daughters, sisters. And I'm wondering, is there more that you can share about their particular needs, as women, as they, find their footing and transition back into society? Like, what are some of their particular needs, as women?
That's a great question. So I think it's really important to understand kind of the framework that we're dealing with, and to recognize that in Texas, in the last 30 years, the rates of female incarceration have risen 900%, whereas the male counterparts have only risen about 300%. So we're talking about a population that our system really isn't designed to house. And with that, and I'm not implying that men who go to prison or criminal justice involved do not have trauma of their own, but across the board, it's much more severe in our women population. And so when we house them and we release them without having to deal with that trauma, they're going back into their communities, right? And so men go into prison and come out of prison differently situated than their female counterparts, in that when women get released from prison, they're expected to snap right back in and to step into that role as a care provider, either for their children or other members of the community, and then largely aren't responsible, held to responsibility in the same way. And so when you look at these women who have lived on the margins for so long and have just been given the barest essentials to rebuild their lives and pile on the expectations for what we think they should be doing as women. And it oftentimes is crushing, that expectation and the weight of that responsibility. And so what you find is that the women just go back to prison because that's the life they know. We are hopeful that we can break that cycle by giving them the tools to envision a life better than the one they left.
That number is just so striking, that the number of women who are incarcerated in Texas has gone up 900%. What are your insights as to why it's gone up so much?
Well, I just think that it's a combination of things. It's economics, it's the drug trafficking, breakdowns of families, women having to live on their own without a support system. They're all things that can be addressed, but we're not doing a very good job at the moment of addressing them, either on the forefront before these women get criminal justice involved, or fixing it so they don't go back once they leave.
I want to talk more about the work that Angela House does, and when you do successfully help a woman like Sharonda or Shannon transition back and build a better life, like, what are some of the ripple effects that you see in their families or communities when specifically women are able to have a second chance?
Absolutely. So obviously the first and foremost is we have given this woman the confidence and the tools to go forward and have a very different and very productive life. That's huge. We have a very small facility. We only serve 16 women at a time. And yet when any of those women come into my office and they're excited about having landed a job, or they're excited about having passed the GED exam, there's a real genuine light and enthusiasm in their eyes that for many of them, it's the first time they've been that excited about a personal accomplishment. But what I find and what I'm consistently blown away by is we have so many wonderful volunteers and donors and people who just want to come, but there's always a little bit of a hesitancy when you take someone from the community who may not be aware of mental health issues as they relate to criminal justice, or addiction issues as they relate to our women, or felons. And there's always a little bit of trepidation. And within minutes, what I find is that these members of the community recognize that these women are just like us, right? They've had a different life path because they may have started out in a different position, or they may have dealt with one thing badly that then spun out of control. But these women want what we want. They want a brighter future for their children. They want stability and independence, and they want a sense of purpose and mission. And so when community members can see that, and then that sort of amplifies the work that we're doing here, there is nothing more rewarding for my residents than to see folks from the community come in and genuinely care about them, care about their success, care about their struggles, because many of these women have never had that kind of support. and unconditional love.
Those themes, they're so universal, right? I mean, we all want kind of a sense of purpose and meaning. You know, something else that you mentioned, and I saw in some of the literature about Angel House, this sense of community. How do y'all go about building that sense of community for these women who come through Angel House, besides the fact that it's, you know, a residential facility and they're there together? But how do you go about building and growing that sense of a community, you know, in an intentional way, so that it sustains them?
Well, like you said, first and foremost, 16 women living together at any one time, that's going to create some drama and some battles. These are strong-willed women. So from the very beginning, we have to learn to figure out how we can live together, they can live together in harmony. But also everything that we do, whether it's through helping them secure employment or helping them find an AA, NA community that speaks to them, I want them not to only have a sisterhood with the women that they're going through the Angela House process with, but I want them to have as many different distinct communities that they can rely on, because life happens for all of us. It's fairly drama-free here at Angela House, but things are going to happen when they move out independently, and I want them to be able to have a network that they can reach out to and lean on when the going gets tough. You know, many of these women, as I've described several times, use the word survivor and strong-willed. They are not used to leaning in. They are not used to looking for support, because that's not how they've managed to get here. They've managed to survive by being self-reliant. And that's, there's a true power to that. But teaching them the gray area of being self-reliant and yet being able to be supported is a huge life lesson.
How do you go about making that shift?
I mean, it's really just sort of honing in and looking at behaviors, looking at, that's a negative past behavior. Why are you repeating that? Is there a better way? And giving them the tools, because a lot of these women, even the ones who are 30, 40, and 50 years old, may never have learned the proper interpersonal skills to deal with that sort of chaotic situation in a more positive way. So it's really just about equipping them with those basic, I call them adulting skills, the nuanced conversations about how we deal with each other in society. Largely, these women didn't get growing up. Either they grew up in incarceration or they grew up in a very chaotic environment. And so those sorts of nuanced conversation skills fell by the wayside. So we spend a lot of time going over, how could we have handled that better? Did you get what you were trying to get from that conversation? And it's, you know, it's a lot of trial and error, but that's, we provide the safe space for that trial and error to occur.
I want to zoom out a little bit and think about more broadly about criminal justice and supporting formerly incarcerated women. How have you seen kind of ideas and approaches change over time? If you think about kind of when you started this work and where things are now, how have the ideas to supporting these women, how has it changed over time?
Well, at the very largest foundational, there has been a realization that we cannot put them in prison, release them, and expect them to be productive without some sort of intervention. And so that's key. And it is happening. It's happening more in the prison system than it was 20 or 30 years ago. But the reality is every legislative session, every other year in Texas, if we're talking about budgetary crisis and the legislators are making a decision between schools and prisons, the prison curriculums are always going to be cut first, which means that groups like Angela House and other private sector groups have to step into the fold. And so you've seen an increase in the amount of organizations like Angela House that are there to assist in that regard. And so that's been a huge thing. We just need 1,000 more of us doing the work that we're doing, because these women are going to continue to be released from prison unless and until we figure out how to help them reintegrate back into society. We can't expect the revolving door to stop.
Have there been any specific lessons that Angela House has learned?
Yeah, I think I learned this pretty early on in my career at Angela House, and that is, this is a long journey for these women. You know, I used to say that I viewed everything in a very engineer-esque way, black and white, win or lose. And you can't do that in this recovery work, right? Some of these women may not stay sober, but for the time that they lived at Angela House, they felt safe and unconditional love. And when they get to a place in their recovery journey where that speaks more to them than whatever the lure of the drug is, then they'll be in the right direction. And so it may not take effect immediately, but we've planted a seed, and that planting a seed is enormous. In the criminal justice world and recovery work, there are often stumbles, and we can't let that define the journey. The journey is, are you making progress, even if it's imperfect?
Yeah. Reminds me of what a mentor has told me, that, you know, play the long game, right? Like, it's, you know, there's a long path ahead. So much of what you do is about second chances and opening doors. And I'm wondering, you know, for you in your life, your personal life or your professional life, how did that idea of second chances, you know, opening doors, how did that first show up in your life?
I graduated law school and went directly into the district attorney's office as a prosecutor. And it quickly became a them and an us. I was a prosecutor and they are accused of a crime. And what I realized the further I spent at the DA's office was that there was very little separating us and them. You know, life choices, bad luck on their part, good luck on mine, maybe. And so then it struck me how we're all in this together. And if we do the us and the them, we can never expect better behavior from the other party. And so if we can help each other, and that's the other thing, the folks who come in from the community, every single one of them will tell me, I expected to give all of this good grace to the women of Angela House. And what happens is they walk away transformed from the lessons that they've learned from the residents. And I think that's kind of speaks to this whole, the reason that we're all here.
With those numbers that you shared earlier, what kind of demand are you seeing from women who want to be a part of Angela House, that they really want to build that second chance and they need that support? I mean, 16 beds isn't very much. What kind of demand do you see for this kind of support?
We generally house about 40 women per calendar year. And each calendar year, we get between 400 and 600 applications. It's an overwhelming need. And I know that they're not just applying to us. They're applying to other facilities that are similar to us all over the state. But the need is far bigger than the organizations and beds that are available even within the state.
And so what do you do for the women who apply and, you know, you just don't have space? Or even how do you go about deciding that between all those applications?
It just is a gut feeling. A lot of it is timing. Look, you're getting out in June. Well, we have a bed available in June. For the women who we don't feel like they're a good fit or we don't have space for, we always give them a list of resources for where they might also look for beds. And then to the extent that they have family members that reach out, we'll also kind of give them, you know, residency lists as well as social service lists. There are plenty of social services that are available to these women, but a lot of times the women don't know about them. And so knowledge is power, right? And so we give them as much information, if we're not able to assist them, in hopes that someone else will be.
For the general public, people who may not have very much contact with women who are formerly incarcerated, what are some of the common misconceptions that you come up against?
That there's something broken in these women that isn't repairable, that they don't mind being in the criminal justice system, that they don't have the same aspirations and hopes that we all have for ourselves and our family. These women, many of them could sit across the table from you, and unless you asked, you would never know their life stories. Many of them, you might sit across from the table and make wildly incorrect assumptions about who they are, or where they came from, and what they've survived. And so, you know, the largest gift for me is just being able to listen. And I think that if we all did that a little more, these women, the outcomes for these women would be significantly greater than they already are, because we would have that shared connection, that shared humanness, that many of us are too quick to judge and too quick to write them off. These women are not finished. Many of them are just starting their journey, and if given an opportunity and a platform and a little bit of grace, they could do great things.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing some of the journey with me and with the Junior League of Houston.
Well, thank you for giving me the platform, and thank you for asking such great questions.
That was Kristen Guinea. She's the executive director of Angela House, which is a transitional facility in Houston for women who are coming out of incarceration. It's dedicated to giving them the tools and support they need to build a better life for themselves and their families. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can stay engaged with the Junior League of Houston during this time and with the podcast. Visit us on Instagram, Facebook, or jlh.org. Our music is from Ketsa and Poddington Bear. I'm Laura Eisensee, and this is She Becomes, a podcast from the Junior League of Houston. And stay well.